Okay.
Shalom.
There's a famous saying, I think we mentioned it in the past, that geniuses are usually two generations ahead of their time. And Pashut, they see ahead. And Rav Kook's book on vegetarianism is exactly that.
Sure.
They're going around. Today, there are a lot of vegetarians in the world, especially among women. I know that in the Midrashot, they ask you at the beginning of the year, do you have any dietary issues? One of the questions, are you a vegetarian? In other words, it's on the agenda. And I'll already say from the beginning, Rav Kook was not a vegetarian. He had a student, the Nazir, who was a Nazir, who not only did he not eat meat, he did not drink wine, he did not wear leather, and he grew his hair long, mamash like a Nazir. He spoke 9 languages, but he would only speak Lashon HaKodesh. And it was a very, very interesting character. I gave a lecture in Petach Tikva 2 weeks ago. And I mentioned, they're mostly older women. And I asked if any of them knew the Nazir. And 3 women raised their hands. I asked them if you could please come up to me at the end of class. And because in one of the Midrashot, one of the girls asked me, was the Nazir a vegan or a vegetarian? In other words, did he eat eggs? And it's hard to know, but I asked the women at the end of the class what they remember about the Nazir. He died in the late 60s, early 70s. And one of the women tells me that, I didn't ask her specifically, I just said in general, what do you remember from the Nazir? She said that she was a little girl, and her father had a lul, a chicken coop, in a moshav, Beit Meir, if you heard of it. And once a week, she would go with her father to bring eggs to the Nazir. So I finally had the answer to the question. What Rav Kook is going to tell us, I'll just foreshadow a drop. Again, he himself wasn't a vegetarian, but he said in life it's important to know. You know what I'm going to draw? The arrow. It's important to know if the arrow is going there or if it's going there. In other words, when we look at the Torah, it's very clear that the Torah wants us, prefers us to be vegetarian. And even if we're not on that level yet, it's good to talk about it and to learn about it. That's what we're going to do today. Source 1, Chazon HaTzimchonut, Piska Dalet. Bevo heter HaTorah L'achilat Basar. When the Torah allows us to eat meat, there are 2 places where the Torah allows us to eat meat. Where was the first place?
Noah.
Yafeh, after the flood. The original plan was that man was supposed to be vegetarian. God begrudgingly allowed us to eat meat after the flood. Mashma, it's b'di'evet, it's begrudgingly. That wasn't the original plan. The second time was after Matan Torah, when Hashem gave us the Torah, and He tells us how to shochet, how to ritual slaughter. Acharei kedushat haMitzvot b'Matan Torah, after Hashem gave us the Torah that we're going to celebrate next week, b'ezrat Hashem on Shavuot. By the way, all of you know that there's a minhag to eat chalavi, to eat dairy on Shavuot, and there are like 12-13 different reasons. One of the, I think, in my opinion, the most logical reason is Pashut. After Hashem gave the Torah, there were so many details to eat meat that we couldn't eat meat on Shavuot. You know, till you prepare the knives, till you prepare the salt, till you prepare everything, you know, it would take a while. So in memory of that, we don't eat meat on Shavuot. Hericha ba'atzat ha'dvarim. The Torah goes at lengths. We all know that the Torah does not waste words. But here the Torah, Sefer Dvarim, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Kaf, second line, source 1, Ve'amarta ochla basar. If you should say, I want to eat meat. What does that infer, if you should say, I want to eat meat? You may say you want to eat meat, and you may say you don't want to eat meat. There very well may be different time periods in history, in world history. Sometimes we will want to eat meat. Other times we won't want to eat meat. Continues the Torah, Ki tove nafshecha le'chol basar. When you will lust to have meat, b'chol avat nafshecha tochal basar, when with all of your lust you shall eat meat. Girls, the term lust, what does that infer? It's a desire, but it's not such a positive desire, right? It's like a negative desire. And here, the Torah is hinting to us that it would be better. By the way, I should already say from the beginning, if you were to ask me, what is my favorite food? The answer is steak. I am not on this level of vegetarianism, and I'm totally honest.
This is all in Source 1.
Yeah. Yesh kan ge'arat chacham. The Torah is talking to us with rebuke to the wise. In other words, anybody who knows to read in between the lines sees that the Torah is not excited about this idea of eating meat. Anybody remember who are the two hunters in the entire Torah?
Esav
and? No? Worse. No, Nimrod. And these are two dubious characters. I wouldn't want to be associated with them. I actually should have brought the Node of Yehuda. The Node of Yehuda was asked a question about, is a Jew allowed to hunt? You know, in the southern states of the United States, a lot of people, you know, they hunt deer, or they hunt buffalo, or they hunt... So the Node of Yehuda, his first answer is, what Jew would want to hunt? That's not a Jewish thing to do, you know, to go out with your shotgun, and, you know. But Rav Kook is saying in this, he'ara gvulit, there is a footnote here. You know, sometimes you're reading an article and there's like a asterisk with a footnote. In other words, the Torah says, should you have lust to eat meat, you have to slaughter it in a painless way. But should you not have that lust, that would even be better. Do you all see what Rav Kook is saying? It's like, again, the Torah, point note, and that's something Rav Kook is going to say, God knows very well how to prohibit things. Right? There are 365 mitzvot lo taseh. Thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that. God could have said, thou shalt not eat meat, but he doesn't want to. Because we're not ready for it. Do you see, it's sort of a paradox. On the one hand, it's not good, it's b'di'evid. On the other hand, so why does he allow it? Right? So that's what we're going to talk about. Klomar. Kol zman shumusariyutcha pnimit lo takutz v'achilat basar balei chayim kamo shekvar atakatz mi basar adam. As long as you're not disgusted with eating meat, like you are disgusted with eating human flesh, then you can eat meat. But the day will come that just like mankind has matured, people used to be cannibals, right? They say in Africa somewhere, there's still here and there are cannibals, right? But even at the time that the Torah was given, mankind had already matured out of cannibalism. And that's why the Torah does not say, thou shalt not eat people. Because man does not need a commandment like that. Just like there's no mitzvah to breathe, because we would breathe anyway. There's no mitzvah, no prohibition to eat people, because nobody would want to eat people anymore. Again, Rav Kook is telling us that used to be, but we are on the slow but sure direction towards morality. And that's what mankind is about. You cold?
Yeah, but...
Let's go on. The Meshel Chochmah, let's look together in Source 2. The Meshel Chochmah writes something very interesting. Pru Urvu. There is a mitzvah to have children. Girls, who's obligated to have children? Men, women, or both?
Men.
Now, isn't that weird? Because you need women to have children, but the Torah doesn't command it. Not only that, pru or vu is worded in the plural. if Hashem is talking to Adam and Chava, that infers that women are also obligated to have children, right? Good question. Lo rachoku lomar. Have you heard of the Meshech Chochma?
Yeah.
Dor Sameach, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk. Ha shepatra Torah nashim ipru urvu. Why does the Torah exempt women from having children? V'chiva rak anashim, and just obligates men. Ki mishpatei Hashem udrachav darkei noam. V'chol netivotea shalom. The way of the Torah is pleasantness. The mitzvot are supposed to be nice, pleasant. V'lo amsa ala Yisraeli, ma she'en b'yecholet haguf lekabel. The Torah does not overload on the Israeli, the Jew, more than we can take. Now that's something to remember, because we're going to get back to this. And that's, you know what, I'll already foreshadow, that's really what Rav Kook is going to say, why the Torah does not say, thou shalt not eat meat, because we're not ready for it. And Bezrat Hashem, when you have children, you'll see that chinuch, educating children, is a very delicate balance. On the one hand, you want to advance them little by little by little. Teach them independence, teach them how to cross the street, teach them how to make decisions, right? On the other hand, you don't want to give them too much responsibility when they're too young, right? They're not ready for it. So you've got to do it gradually. Yeah?
Why would they say no meat? Like, the reason for that?
Just like we don't eat people because we say it's immoral, the day will come that, you know what? That's really the topic of this year. You ask the right question at the right time, you know, so I'll answer it properly rather than in one sentence. Yeah.
I don't understand how that answers the question of why does the Torah only obligate men with
kids? Oh, because the Torah, we'll just go on, read on a little drop and we'll get to the answer. V'im ken nashin shemistaknot bibur v'leida. Women, since the sin of Adam and Chava, since the punishment, it's dangerous and it's very painful to give birth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want to obligate women to do something which is painful. You want to do it, you know, you want to have children, you want to nurse, you want to, right? That's fantastic. But not only is it fantastic, it's necessary, otherwise the world wouldn't continue. But Hashem doesn't want to overburden us. Yeah, the Meshech Chochma goes on and then gives another interesting answer. Od yitachin lomar, second to bottom line, betam shepatra Torah nashim mipir yavarivya, mishum debeemet halo tvua beteva hachuka, ubinekeva od yoter. Look at the females in Lahavdil, the animal world. Females always want to give birth. And they like naturing, and they like feeding the children, and that's parshut. God put it inside our nature. The Meshech Chochma gives a beautiful diuk. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Bereishit Lamed Hei, tells Yaakov Avinu, pre urve. What is the difference between pre urve and pre urvu? Fantastic. After the punishment of Chava, with the pains of childbirth, Hashem took Pruervu and turned it into Preurve. Do you see that? Because He doesn't want to make things difficult for a woman. He wants a woman to be able to fulfill the mitzvot, and some women it's just too tough for them. Yeah.
But what about like Brit Milah? Like that's a commandment, and that causes pain to the baby.
The Rambam talks about that. And one of the explanations is that that's one of the reasons why we do it at 8 days. Where the nervous system isn't as much as, is not as developed. They say that to do a Brit Milah for like, today there's, I was talking before with Rabbi Lerner, but there's so many converts. I get a kick every Yom HaShoah to think that just 70 years ago, everybody was hiding their Brit Milah and hiding their Judaism, you know, in order to save their lives. Who would have thought that 70 years later there are millions of people who want to be Jewish today? You know, Baruch Hashem. Yeah, but they say it's very difficult for older people.
So if what Sophie's saying is that like if they like Hashem doesn't want to obligate us on something that's going to cause pain. So then, and then the convert would have to have written off. So if like that's true, that he doesn't want to obligate us on something that's going to cause pain, shouldn't there be a rule that like, oh, once you're a certain age, you don't need to get a written off? If you never got one?
Yeah. I would understand it if it were that way. But the fact that it's not that way apparently means to say that this Brit Milah is such an important thing. By the way, there were a lot of Romans. When, at the beginning of Christianity, when mankind started maturing out of paganism, they saw paganism bowing down to idols, it was stupidity. So they wanted to be monotheistic. Unculus. The Rabbi Meir's father, Rabbi Akiva's father, Shmaya of Talion. We know a lot of the Tanaim were converts, or their parents were converts, because that's what the intellectuals in Rome did, because that was the only really palatable, relevant religion. And then Christianity came on the scene and suggested what you suggested. They said, you can be monotheistic without Brit Milah. Without Netilat Yadayim, without all those difficult mitzvot. And that's why people went after Christianity. Because otherwise we would be overrun with people who weren't really sincere. You know, or maybe they're a little sincere, but in the words of the Green Bay Packer coach Vince Lombardi, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And that's something that we know from Jewish history, and we know from life. You know, just look what's happening today in Israel in the streets. You know, life is not a rose garden, right? Life is not easy. When we're children, our parents protected us, right? You're now at the age that you're beginning to realize that you really have been protected, thank God. But now, you know, it's time to grow up. And there are challenges in life. But what's interesting, which challenges Hashem makes optional, which challenges He forbids, which challenges He obligates. And the bottom line is, and this really brings us to the punchline, this is something that we spoke about in the past, and it really comes from here, from Chazon HaTzim Chumut. If you remember, we spoke about how everything starts with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Before there was a world, it was just Him. But God, as if it were, has three roles, wears three different hats. Anybody remember what are the three hats? Does it sound familiar?
Yeah, it's
5,781 years ago, what did He do? He created. God is the creator. 3,333 years ago, easy to remember. He is the Torah giver. Notice that it's coming in, again, like everything, gradual. First, He created the world. Then, after 2,000 years, He gave us the Torah. What is the third hat that God wears?
Like present day, everything.
He runs history. Hashgacha. The God who runs history. Now, it's all the same God, obviously, right? We believe in monotheism. But this is a good way of identifying how the world is running. Because everything starts with God and then breaks up into three aspects which all work together to bring us, if I were a little more accurate, I would draw these lines as ups and downs, right? But you can imagine that it's up and down. To bring us to the end goal, which is the godly ideals, godly morality, so that little by little Hashem wants us to be better people. But He doesn't bang us over the head and say overnight to a primitive tribe, thou shalt not eat meat, thou shalt not have slaves, right? If God would have said that, we would have jumped the Torah. Remember we spoke about, we had a shiur about mitzvot that seem immoral or outdated, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He knows exactly how to develop us. Now, God the Creator created us with a conscience. How does the conscience play here? It gets us to feel bad when we do bad. It gets us to feel good when we do good, right? Even if you see somebody, I don't know, getting mugged in the New York subway, right? You feel bad for the guy, for the victim, right? The same thing, I think a normal person, when you see an animal being slaughtered, and you see it living and then killed, that bothers your conscience. Now, when we need to eat meat, you know, it bothers us a little, so that's not going to make us vegetarians, okay? But that is this is one of the factors. I have a daughter who's a vegetarian. I had a sister, Zichrona Livracha, who was a vegetarian. And what got her to eat meat, to stop eating meat, was they, on the kibbutz Yavne, they put her in a public kitchen, and they had her clean 500 chickens, and exactly, that's what she said. And set her. So that's our conscience. Now, the Torah giver, Hashem is also the Torah giver, and he, Rav Kook calls this, knocks upon the heart. The Torah, little by little, gives us these knockings on the heart to little by little open our heart to be more moral. For example, what are some of the mitzvot that we have that show us that animals have feelings, that they're not wood, they're not styrofoam?
Like milk and meat.
Okay, yafeh. Davka Rav Kook is going to talk about that, about how drinking milk, Hari, that milk really is meant for the little baby, for the calf. And also killing the mother. Yeah, mankind is more important than man should be healthy than animals, right? Man is a higher level. But that's too much, right? Also to kill the mother, and also to cook in the milk, which was meant for the calf, right? That's too much. Okay? What else? Yeah?
Wait, so milk and meat is because of morals? It's not because of, like, danger?
There are a lot of different reasons. We don't know the reasons. But that's one of the things that we're going to be learning today. Ta'amei ha-mitzvot is... By the way, what is the word ta'amei ha-mitzvot?
Flavor.
Did y'all catch that? It's not the reason of the mitzvah, because we don't know the reason what made God command this or that, right? But we can, if vegetables are tasty, right, then your children will want to eat them, right? So too, if the mitzvot are tasty, we'll have more of a motivation to want to do them. So that's why the Sefer HaChinuch, the Rambam, Rav Kook, Rav Hirsch, talks about trying to get the flavor of the mitzvah, to give us more motivation. But
meat, is dairy in the same category as meat?
In terms of what?
Like,
no.
But I think
it's less problematic.
Industrialized, though, like, it's not just about it, it's bad.
Yeah. And, well, that's the machloka between vegans and vegetarians. A vegan would say, no, the milk is meant for the baby, for the calf.
For 7 months.
Yeah, and?
Well, yeah, but I didn't do it for ethical reasons. I just needed to do it, and then I had to stop because I, like, fainted so many times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You actually fainted?
Yeah.
Well. Bikitsur, girls, what is Tsar Balei Chaim? You're not allowed to hurt an animal. Even when we slaughter animals, we have to do it in the most painless way possible. I'll tell you a personal story. I was in second grade. I still remember. We were living in Chicago. And it was Friday. And, you know, the whole family has to shower at the same time, and we're seven people. And my brother was in the shower, so my mother said, okay, you shower in our... My parents had a bathroom there, so you shower in our shower. So I showered, maybe the first time there. And as I was showering, I found my mother's razor for her legs. I'd never seen it before. I didn't know what it was. And I started, like, curious kid, you know, turning it this way and that, and this way and that. And then I noticed that the water on the floor of the shower was red. And then I looked up at the water coming from the faucet. It wasn't red. I looked down, and I looked up, and I looked down, and I was trying to figure what's going on. I had seen the movie The Ten Commandments, you know, about the water turning into blood. And then I thought it was a miracle. And then I saw that my hands were totally cut up. Why do I tell you this disgusting story? Because the razor was so sharp, I literally did not feel anything. And that's the halacha, why we have to checked with a sharp knife. Do you know the mitzvah of Otoved Beno Lo Tishkatu B'Yom Echad? You're not allowed to slaughter a mother and her calf on the same day. Right? You have to eat meat, okay, but that's too much. Right? To kill a mother and a daughter on the same day. Do you people know, you all know the bracha of Shechianu, right? Wear new clothing. Do you know that you don't make Shechianu on leather clothing? If you have a leather jacket, cool leather jacket, or a fur coat, or shoes, why don't we make Shechianu on those shoes? Because we would prefer not to have to kill the animal. What is Shechianu v'kimanu v'igyanu lazman hazeh? Hashem, thanks so much for bringing me to this point in life that I have a cool leather jacket. No, I would prefer, you know what? It's interesting. Even if I like leather jackets, theoretically, I would have preferred if I could wear a cool leather jacket without having to kill an animal. Do you all see how it works? This is another knocking on the heart. Has anybody ever heard of the bracha titchadesh? Titchadshi? Someone of your friends who wear get something new. You don't say that on leather either. Why? Because we're not happy when something has to be killed. Okay, so this is the creator. This is the Torah giver, little by little knocking on our hearts, where again, God originally told Adam, your diet is vegetarian. By the way, after the Mabul, why did Hashem have to allow man to eat meat? Sorry?
Everything was flooded.
Everything else was destroyed, exactly. There was no choice. But it's very clearly b'di'evid. You all know what b'di'evid is, right? That's not God's dream. That's not the ideal world. And not only that, I'll already foreshadow again, Rav Kook is telling us that the ideal world is a stage that we want to return to. The Sefer Derech Hashem, the Ramchal, he writes about that all of life is constantly striving to climb to return to the level that we were in Gan Eden. Again, we're not there yet. But we have to know, is the arrow going here or is it going there? Do you all see where Rav Kook is going? Is saying? Now we get to the God of history. Maybe the most interesting. Because little by little, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets man find inventions. Does anybody know, how do you say invention in Hebrew? Hamtza'a. What's the shoresh? Limtso. What is Limtso?
Find.
In other words, electricity was always there, but somewhere along the line, Hashem decides it's in our interest. We're ready to find it. Do you all see it? It was always there, but we have to find it. Chevra, we all remember Eli Whitney and the cotton gin. Still teach about that? Certain things never change. It's like the mitochondria is still the powerhouse of the cell.
Yes.
And Sokotoa.
Yeah. Oh my God. No, I did not need to remember that.
And Mesopotamia.
Yeah.
Mesopotamia is the cradle of civilization. Yeah? Well, we must have had the same teacher. Bikitsur, Eli Whitney and the cotton gin. Why was that such a turning point? For years, the northern states in America did not have slaves. And they told the southerners, you're primitive, you're backward, you're immoral, how can you rule over people? And the southerners said, oh, you guys are big talkers. You don't have cotton. You don't have agriculture. Right? In an agricultural society, remember we spoke about this in outdated mitzvot. By the way, I checked it up, 30% of ancient societies was always slaves. In the South, before 1865, before Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves, 30% were still slaves. Agriculture is based on cheap labor. So, all of a sudden, God revealed to Eli Whitney a machine that can pick cotton. And then Abraham Lincoln could turn to the southern states and say, you have no excuses any longer. Do you see that? In other words, but let's start with Abraham Lincoln. Girls, why did Lincoln, where did he think of this idea of freeing the slaves? Hari, if you look in the Codex of Hammurabi 3,000 years ago, we have laws of Ashur from the time of Avraham Avinu. You were allowed to kill your slave. A slave who stole from the master, they would cut off his nose and his ears. A shifcha, if a woman slave was chutzpahdik to her female master, however you say that, they would take a half a kilo of salt and put it in her mouth to burn her mouth, to teach her a lesson. Girls, the world used to be very primitive. And they used to cut off hands if they caught somebody stealing. But a slave, he wasn't even considered a human being. Slaves were called, even in Rome, that's, 2,000 years, a little more than 2,000 years ago, they were called something vocalis, a machine that talks. That's what slaves were called. Slaves were not seen as people. So imagine what they thought of animals. Right? Animals are like styrofoam. Slaves are like animals. Little by little, the Torah tells us, no, you have to treat your slave morally. And if there's one piece of cake, if there's one pillow, who gets it? The slave. And you have to pay for your slave's wife's food, and her clothing, and her children's orthodontia, and everything that he and his children... How did Chazal summarize the laws of slavery? Whoever buys a slave has bought a master for himself. In other words, it's very clear that the Torah does not like the idea of slavery. Just like we spoke then about the idea that the Torah is very clear that having two wives is not a good idea. Remember we spoke about that? What are two wives called to each other? Anybody remember? Sarot, right? Sarot is just asking for trouble. Throughout the Tanakh, there are troubles. So why did the Torah allow it? Because again, primitive man did not have surrogate mothers. They didn't have test tube babies. On the other hand, in agricultural society, somebody who doesn't have children doesn't have anybody to support them when he gets older. So yeah, the Torah had to, in order to be relevant 3,300 years ago, the Torah had to allow to take a second wife and had to allow having slaves. But little by little, you see what Rav Kook is saying? There are different levels of the Ratzon of God. If something is really, really bad, he says, thou shalt not kill, period. But if something is a little high, but eventually Hashem wants to get us there, Hashem will give us hints showing us that animals have feelings. Shiluach haken also, right? You have to send away the mother bird before you take the eggs. So the Torah doesn't say you're not allowed to take eggs, but you have to take into account the feelings. Do you all see how the God of history and the God who gave the Torah and the God of creation all works together to lead in the same direction? Heva? This is ingenious, what Rav Kook is telling us. And it really helps us understand a lot of the Torah. For example, just another example. Does anybody know the mitzvah of Lo Ta'amod Al Dam Re'echa? You're not allowed to stand by?
While someone
is getting hurt. You have to intervene. Okay? Now, when God created the world, He created time. So God is above time. Right? He created time, so He's above time. That means that He knew that this year, on this date, there would be an Arab chasing a Jew in Yerushalayim. Okay? Now, the God of history stopped doing supernatural miracles because He wants us to have more free will. Right? He wants us to be more independent. Right? We spoke about that. Right? So God is not going to swallow up the terrorist, right, with a supernatural miracle. So how does God save the Jew? When He gave the Torah 5,700 years ago, He told you and me that if you ever see a fellow Jew in danger, you have an obligation to step in. That's how he saves the Jew. Do you see that? The Jew, Nebuch, is crying to God, God, save me. How does God save him? Through you and me. Did you all see that? This is a very important message regarding all of the Torah. Let's see another point. The Rambam in Source 3 in Moreh Nevuchim, he talks about evil in the world. V'amin ha-shlishi min ha-ra'ot hu ma she-ye'are la'adam mimenu mipu'ulato hu atzmo. There are three types of evil in the world. The first two types that the Rambam wrote about beforehand is evil that's built into nature, right? Once every 100 years there is a earthquake, right? Or a tsunami. A lot more common than that is the evil that man does to each other. That's wars, terrorism, somebody offends you, right? Your boss fires you, right? There are a lot of, that's a lot more common, right? Every day people do wrong to each other, they talk lashon hara. That's the second, a lot more common type of evil. But the Rambam says, you know what the most common form of evil is? What we do to ourselves. La'adam imenu mipu'ulato hu atzmo. Vezeu hamatsui harbe. This is the most common form of evil. Girls, just last week, after the tragedy in Meron, right, where the 45 people were trampled to death, and I have a website where people ask questions. So also on the WhatsApp site and also on the internet site, a lot of people were asking the same question. You know, how could we understand this tragedy? People go to have a spiritual, uplifting experience in Meron, and this is what happened? How could God do such a thing? What would the Rambam answer? That's what I answered. Habibi, if you have an area which is legally built to hold 10,000 people, and you put 200,000 people into that area, you are the one who's making the problem. Now, the fact that Hashem did us a miracle every year, and I've been in Meron, there is nothing that you can imagine which is more crowded than Meron. There's a Meron dance that I used to joke about it. It's not funny anymore. But how do you get to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's grave? Everybody, there's no room to dance. You're just like dancing in your place. You can't move left or right. And somebody from the back is pushing you. And little by little, you move forward until you get to the kever. And you say your Tehillim while you're on the move. And then you're out. And girls, anybody. Now, the truth is, I admit I was there. And I was just as wrong as everyone. Because I went there. I enjoyed part of the spiritual uplifting is that massive, you know, Berovam Hadrat Melech. I honestly would not have thought that people would be crushed to death until it happened. And the Rambam is saying, don't complain to God. God, why did you do this? You did it to yourself. If the state of Israel has laws that you're not allowed more than a certain amount of people in an elevator, right? Or a certain amount of people in movie theater, right? You've seen signs, right? Or a certain amount of people in a simcha center. So we should have been, how much more so, careful in an area which is not twice as much, not 10 times as much. We're talking like 40 times more, more times more people than should have been there. Yeah.
Has it never happened before, though?
That's a miracle. It really is. Thinking back, you know, till something happens, you don't believe it's going to happen. You know, theoretically, if I were to ask you, hey, what would happen if you have 200,000 people in an area for 10,000 people? Theoretically, somebody said, yes, but until it happens, you know, then people look, you know, who should have blown the whistle? Who should have, you know, who give the order? Who let them go there? And by the way, unfortunately, it was the religious, it was the Haredi members of Knesset who every year they pressure the government to allow bending of the rules. And that's not the way you run a modern Western state. That's, by the way, that's the problem that we have now today with the Arabs also. For 70 years, we turned the blind eye whenever the Arabs broke the law. They don't pay taxes, you know. So, you know, that's their problem. They build buildings without permits. Okay, so if it falls, it's their problem, you know. But we have enough problems with Egypt, Jordan, Syria. We have so many enemies in the world, the United Nations, you know, Biden isn't such a great friend, Obama was really, you know. We have enough problems with the enemies that we have no choice but to battle. So whenever we can turn a blind eye, we do. And it turns out you cannot run a state. You might be able to run a shtetl. You know what a shtetl is? You know, like a little ghetto. With 1,000 people or 2,000 people in Europe, and, you know, somebody doesn't follow the law, so you wink, you know, he winks, you wink, you know what I mean? And you turn a blind eye. Girls, you cannot run a country that way. That's a galut mentality. And galut mentality is, you know, somebody can't pay their taxes to shul, so you wink and say, okay, we'll let you go. You can't run a state that way. You know, obviously there's welfare, there are people who can't pay, there are different ways of dealing with these issues. But it's not, you can't just wink your eye and say, yeah, beseder, you know, it'll all be okay. You can't run a state that way, right? That's in third world countries, that's how they run things in Africa. We're not there anymore. We have to learn how to run a modern state. And what that means is if Arabs all of a sudden decide they want to pick on a Jew, you know, so theoretically, legally, you know, an Arab comes up to a Jew and slaps him in the face. And we know who did it. I don't know how long you could put him in jail, right? It wasn't life-threatening. He's just embarrassing. You know, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But if the state of Israel sees that that happens 5 times, 6 times, 7 times, 8 times, 9 times, that means that the Knesset has to lay down a law. We are going to crack down, even if it's just for a year. Within the next year, whoever makes an anti-Semitic act is not just going to be given 2 days in jail. He's going to be given 20 years in jail. And you know what? That will deter people. And the same thing with the problems with the Hamas. What's the problem with, why are they shooting us rockets all the time? The Arabs hide among civilian population, among their own brothers. Now they know that we're nice, and we don't want to bomb innocent women and children and civilians. So they take advantage of that. So if here there's a civilian, here there's a civilian, all these are civilians, and then they put a tank right in the middle so that we won't shoot them. So our civilians have to suffer more than their civilians? Girls, do you see how absurd that is? Why should our civilians suffer? Whoever isn't willing to act like a mensch, he's the one who should be in the zoo. He's the one who should be behind bars. He's the one who should pay the price. His civilians, his daughters, his children should have to pay the price for his own immorality. But don't use my morality against me. And it's all a matter of how to run a state. We had not run a state for 2,000 years. And in Galut, we were scared what these going would say, what those going would say, what America's going to say, what the United Nations is going to say. And we have to stop worrying about what the goyim are going to say. That's not what an independent people does. An independent people makes a decision. We are not going to let hundreds of rockets to be fired at our innocent civilians. Why should my child have to sleep in a shelter night after night after night, and they're crying, and while the children of the enemy, they're having a good time, you know, and they're laughing at us? That is not a way to run a state. We got off the topic a little. How do we get started talking about that?
I asked why.
Oh, there you go. Okay, Chevra, we have another 2 minutes. Let's do another point. So we started doing the Rambam. The Rambam talks in source number 3 about how most of the bad in the world is what we bring upon ourselves. That people eat too much, or sleep too much, or sleep too little, or have too much sex. ויסיק בהם בהפרזת כאן, ואת סדרה. וכי מידות הנפש נסבחות למזג הגוף. Here's the punchline regarding our point. The body and the soul work together. Somebody who has a problem in values, that's the type of person who's going to smoke himself to death. Because he cares more about immediate pleasure, which is like a childish pleasure, rather than thinking, you know, if you smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day, eventually you're going to have lung cancer. And then you're going to turn to God and complain. Why did the people of that generation start dying earlier? Right? Metushelach died at the age of 960. Adam lived to the age of 930. Everyone's living till 900, 850, and then all of a sudden goes down to 120. What happened? Man's spirituality and physicality fell together. In other words, human health fell as a result of our lack of values. Do you all see that? You all see what the Rambam was saying? The Sforno adds another aspect. Let's see together in Source 4. The Sforno adds, V'kilkula yisodot v'mezonot. When man, just like today, when we use the wrong deodorant spray and little by little cause a break in the ozone layer, we are making problems for ourselves. So that after the Mabul, the world was a lot less healthy. Food was less healthy. Oxygen was less healthy. All of this was a direct direction, directly connected with our loss of values. But what was the worst loss of values? Chazal tell us that the flood, the people of the flood, they were transgressing bestiality. They were sleeping with animals. And they were eating people. Rav Kook explains, God had to allow eating meat in order to broaden and clarify the gap between animals and people. If you want to treat animals like people, there are two possibilities. Either you're going to respect animals like you respect people. What's the other possibility? You're going to treat people like you treat animals. And that's what was happening. So comes God and he says, you know what? Animals, you don't marry. You eat animals. Human beings, you don't eat. You marry them. Did you see the difference? This clarification helped mankind. Yeah, animals suffered because of this clarification that we began eating meat. But for human nature, it was an advancement because it helped us clarify that human beings have tzelem elokim. They have a spark of God. You don't eat humans, and you don't sleep with animals. You eat animals, you marry humans. See the difference? Very interesting. Okay, we're going to continue next time. Bezrat Hashem.